Mike.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Hearing live jazz in Charlotte has been a challenge. Efforts come and go, but perhaps the fortunes of those who want to hear this music in town are about to change. Jazz great Wynton Marsalis is part of an effort being spearheaded by Blumenthal Performing Arts and Lonnie Davis, locally notable for her jazz arts initiative. And we hear more about the Charlotte Classic Jazz Festival 2014 later in the program. First, the story that was born as a movie but went on to become an 8-time Tony Award-winning Broadway musical. Once is as unique a musical and musical experience as you'll find. It begins with an opportunity to mingle with the cast and have a drink at the onstage bar. But the heart of its uniqueness is its score. Once tells the simple love story of two people from different walks of life who come into and change each other's lives. It's a story told through lyrical song, no glitter, no dancing, no special effects. Despite winning the Tony for Best Musical, it is more of a play with music made by the actors on stage.
Falling slowly, sing your melody.
Once opened last night for a week-long run at the Belk, the lead characters are simply referred to as Guy and Girl. And joining us in the first part of the program is the girl who plays Girl, Danny Duvall. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. I'm told we were supposed to have Guy here as well. But he
part of the puzzle.
Yeah, he bailed on us because he's in rehearsal right now at 9 o'clock in the morning.
No, he's in rehearsal in probably in about an hour, but I think getting up at 7 and then doing that in the show.
And you know, you've been on the road for a year. Why is he in rehearsal? He does know his part by now, doesn't he?
I hope so, yeah. We actually just had some new cast members come in last night. Was their opening night. We had some people leave after a year, and there's a new girl understudy.
For your part?
For my part, yeah. And so it's just kind of a once run through just to see if she does anything drastically different or, you know, see her take on it. And then whenever she needs to go on,
I would think being an understudy is a terribly difficult thing, and you're not the understudy, you're the lead, but I mean...
I have understudy, though. It's hard.
Have you?
I have, yeah.
Because you don't get to go on very much.
No, I never went on, actually.
Really?
It was only a short run. I was in a play called Picnic.
On Broadway?
On Broadway, yeah. It was a 3-month run, and I never went on, but... Yeah, it's a tough job.
What's it feel like never... I know they pay you, even though you don't go on, but what's it like to rehearse and know the lines and be ready to go on? You're waiting for that moment when the star breaks her leg, and you go on and become a big star yourself. But what's it like to never go on?
I mean, it was frustrating in a way because you're kind of chomping at the bit, and you're like, I want to give it a go. But it's also, you just... That's the role of it, and you know that, and...
I don't know which is worse, never going on, or actually getting an opportunity to go on in a situation where you haven't done the part ever before, mm-hmm. in some cases, and suddenly you're in the mix with everybody who does it every night, mm-hmm. and you have to be on par with those who do it every night, and this is your first shot at it with an audience. That has
Absolutely.
To be nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially knowing in my experience the show that I was doing, you know, I was with these huge, amazing actors like Ellen Burstyn and stuff, and I think if I had to go on, I might have had a heart attack anyway. So it was probably a good idea not to. But yeah, it's a really tough job because you've always got to be, like you say, absolutely ready to go on, but possibly never. And I was...
And when you do go on, do they tell you to play it exactly like the person who is normally there, or do you have leeway to add your...
It's a fine balance. I mean, you have to some extent, do what they do because everyone around you is prepared for that. But, I mean, you can't just try and do a carbon copy because right. then you'll probably do a terrible performance. So, yeah, I think it's a balance.
That song that we opened with, that piece of music, Falling Slowly, it won the Oscar for Best Song in a Movie in, I think, 2007. And it is, I think it's unlike most songs that you will hear on a stage in a musical. In fact, the entire score of this show is unlike most, I would say it's almost like unlike any score of a Broadway musical, and it functions differently in this show.
Yeah, it does, because I, you know, usually in a musical, the character can't speak anymore, so he bursts into song, and it's separate from the story. But this is these characters singing these songs in their lives. You know, they're making this music and playing these instruments within their own story. So it's, like you said, it's definitely more a play with music rather than a traditional musical.
And the show kind of sneaks up on the audience because, as I said in the opening, people are invited up on stage prior to the show to get a drink at the bar, and the cast is on, except for the leads, they're on stage and they're performing, they're singing, they're jamming together.
Yeah.
And audience is looking and mingling and coming and going, and suddenly, without warning, the show starts.
Yeah.
Is there a cue? How do people in the show know that, okay, we're starting now? Because I couldn't find the cue.
Yeah. There's we're at a pool of about 30 songs, I think, maybe just under, for those opening jam songs, which
wow,
are
that's more than most musicals have.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how much music those guys know, and they're traditional Czech and Irish folk songs, and those the first three songs rotate every night, so you could come in the week and see all different songs every night.
Okay.
But then the last three are set.
Okay.
And I think it's after the first one that the our stage managers that are on stage will start kind of herding the audience to their seats. And so, yeah, once that it hits that point, it still looks improvised, but as it heads towards the show, it's a bit more set.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you say, I think possibly Stuart singing Leave is the start, if you like. That's when the story started, because he's actually singing that song on the street. Yeah, but it's all very cleverly done. And the lights, you know, the house lights are up for much longer than you think they should be. And so the audience kind of like, what's happening? You know, has the show started or has it not? So.
For a while, I actually thought, well, maybe because they want you to feel like you're there, they're going to leave the house lights up.
Yeah.
And then I thought, no, they can't do that. That would just spoil the whole thing.
Right.
So eventually they go away. This show started life as a movie, and it's a very small movie. It won the Oscar, I think, but it's a very small film. And it's amazing to me that I've not seen the movie, but everybody says who has seen the movie that they're amazed that it could translate to the stage. Had you seen the movie before?
I had, yeah.
Because your part, to me, is remarkable, and the way you play her is remarkable, because you don't know what to expect from her from one moment to the next.
Right. Yeah.
How did you develop her?
You know, I'd seen obviously the film and Marquetta in the film, and I'd seen the Broadway show as well. I'd seen Kristin, and Kristin's take on it was a very strong choice and fantastic. But I thought, I can't just try and do what she did, because, like we just spoke already, you can't just copy what someone does. So we started, and I started kind of just from the page. And as you say, it's all, she's so all, you know, like from every direction, every angle. And she's so forward in her energy and in her kind of investigation of him. And so I kind of just took it from there, and we got a really good chance to play with it. We had 5 weeks of rehearsal, and we were working with John himself.
John Tiffany, the director.
Yeah, so he had lots of insight into her, and I kind of just took it from the what was on the page and went from there, really.
Yeah, it has a really cinematic feel to it. I don't know how to explain it other than that. I mean, when you're looking at this live action on a stage, it's usually bigger than film.
Yeah.
But this is almost the same energy level as film, which is jarring on the one hand and highly effective on the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely ask the audience to kind of come to us, if you like, rather than blast something at them. And we kind of trust that they're going to watch two people sitting in two chairs and listen to a conversation and be kind of like happy with that being enough. And also, I think there's – there's a lot of silence in this in the show, and as much happening in what's not being said as what is, which is different for big musicals.
And there's no dancing. There's staged movement, mm-hmm. but there's no dancing. And I noticed last night in a lot of the scenes and a lot of the conversations that you will have with Guy. what's the actor's name, by the way?
Stuart.
With Stuart. There's not a lot of movement. I mean, you're very still.
Mm-hmm.
Did you talk about that in rehearsal, or is that just something that John Tiffany, the director, wanted? Because it's that, once again, is also very effective. It's almost like you're standing and holding your marks so that the camera mm-hmm. can go back and forth. But there is no camera. It's just us out there watching you on a wide shot. Did you talk about that?
I don't know that we spoke about it as try and be still now. I just think it was all that was necessary for it was kind of do what's necessary and do no more, you know, just be in the moment and you know, have the conversation like you're two people having that conversation, and not much movement would happen in those scenarios, you know.
Another reason why this is unlike any musical many people have probably ever seen. I read that the man who wrote the script for the play version, Enda Walsh, who is an Irish playwright, guffawed when his agent called to ask him to speak to the producers about turning this film into a musical. He called it a stupid idea and turned it down, but took the job ultimately because he knew John Tiffany, the director. And obviously his first impressions were wrong, because this has gone on to be an incredibly successful and realistic piece. But it is realistic, and you are... You're in a musical, so what challenges does that bring to you as an actor to make it real, but you're also in a musical,
right,
which has a whole different feel to it normally?
Yes. I don't think I approached it thinking, I'm in a musical, I've got to kind of hit musical marks or whatever, you know, hit what you normally...
Jazz hands.
Right, exactly. I definitely think I thought about this is still a theatre piece rather than a screen. You know, we're not on camera, and there has to be... We have to reach that back row in some way. And I think that comes from... Even though we're still, there's something about breathing a theatre space that's different to being on camera that... I think we definitely were still aware of. And in terms of the transition from the movie as well, there was characters were expanded, and we see other characters. And I think that you needed that for the stage, because to just watch, as intimate as the film was, and just literally following these two characters, I think that would have been too small for the stage. So I think of it as a musical, but definitely the theatre aspect is still kind of in the back of my mind. And
this play takes place in Dublin, Ireland. I said in the beginning it takes place in a pub, but it really doesn't take place in a pub. The audience gets to go to the pub before the show starts, and then suddenly we're in a music store, and we're in a vacuum cleaner shop.
Yeah.
And we're all over the place, which is, I think, part of the magic of theater, because nothing really happens to change the scene.
Yeah.
You're just there, and the audience...
Accepts it.
And the two main characters are simply called Guy and Girl. Why no names?
You know, we've...
Because you never call each other by your name.
No, I think it's to do with creating the kind of universe. This is a really universal tale, and it's supposed to be anyone, anywhere, could be any two people. And I think it just adds that kind of, you know, ethereal quality to it, that it's any time, any place.
And we'll talk about the story and what's going on here in a second when we come back. Danny Duvall is with us. She's the lead in Once, which opened last night and plays through Sunday at the Belk at the Blumenthal Theater. We're coming back in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Wells Fargo, committed to neighborhoods, small businesses, and the communities they serve. More information available at wellsfargo.com/stories. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And Charlotte Country Day School, preparing the next generation of leaders, thinkers, and doers for more than 70 years. Junior kindergarten and kindergarten admissions open house October 7th at 7 p.m. CharlotteCountryDay.org. Social mobility. mobility, that is the ability of a person to move up the economic ladder, has been declining in this country, and North Carolina is at the bottom of the ladder. We're 50th out of 50 states. And they say that if you're a child who is born into the bottom fifth of income distribution, you are likely to stay there for the rest of your life. It is the worst in the world. We'll talk to some people working on reversing that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Secret Service Director Julia Pearson faces tough questions from Congress about how an armed intruder managed to get so far into the White House, Secret Service failures, and the safety of our president.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
That you'd believe me when others say I lie. I wonder if you could ever despise me when you know I really tried to be a better one to satisfy you for your every. And I'll do what you ask me if you let me be free. If you want me satisfy me. If you
That's our guest, Danny Duvall, singing in Once. That's a song called If You Want Me. And I should point out that all the actors play musical instruments, which we'll talk about here, because I'm sure that throws in a level of difficulty that most actors don't have to have to deal with. In short, Once is about two street musicians. I guess they're street musicians.
He's a street musician.
Who meet, make music together, kind of fall in love. It's kind of cloudy, mm-hmm. At least for her.
Right.
And then change each other's lives. And the person who plays opposite you, Stuart Ward, in addition to being an actor, is also in real life a singer-songwriter. You are an actor.
Yes.
When did you learn to play piano? And when was the first time you played piano in front of an audience?
I started playing piano when I was about 6 or 7, and the first time I played in front of an audience was opening night of this show.
Okay, so yeah. What was that like?
it was pretty nerve-wracking, I have to say. It was the element of it that I was definitely the most apprehensive about. Like I said, I've played all my life, but just for fun, just for myself. So it was new, and it was now I've absolutely got the bug. I love it. It's such another. I mean, in this show, it's like another element of it that is just brings everyone together. You know,
this is not community theater. This is you play in big houses, like the Belk, which is like 3,000 seats somewhere in that neighborhood. So to walk out on a stage and play the piano in front of all those people for the very first time, how do you steal your – I know you've done it in rehearsal. You mm-hmm. know your lines. You know the songs you've played. But suddenly there are people out there.
Yeah.
How do you steal yourself for that moment?
Do you know, I think I just went kind of tunnel vision on that. I mean, there's one particular moment where I have to play like a classical piece on my own, and I knew it inside out, back to front, and I kind of just relied on that and just thought, and touch wood, have never had a major disaster with it. I'm not sure. I just tunnel vision went through, and now it's fine, you know.
So you started with music. When did you decide you wanted to be an actress?
I've done it for as long as I can remember. When I was you know, younger, we used to go, me and my sister used to go to, like, Saturday classes, Saturday drama school lessons. And when I was 10, I went to a performing arts boarding school where we did half a day vocational, half a day academic. So 8 a.m. till midday, we'd do our academic, and then 1 till 5, we'd do dancing, singing, and acting. So I did that from when I was 10 till I was 18, you know, all through growing up. And then I left and went to drama school and studied acting.
Are there many of those boarding schools like that in England?
No, it was actually one of a kind. There's a few other ones for dancing, like for ballet, but ours, I think, possibly the only one.
Because you Brits have this reputation for being really, you have a training system for actors that we don't have in this country, and this is probably true, but we have this perception that you guys are really top notch.
I'm not going to tell you otherwise.
It's not just your accent that puts you above us. It's the fact that you really are. You have a training methodology and tradition, and support for theater and the arts in Britain that we don't have here.
I mean, there are some really fantastic drama schools in London, conservatoire training. I mean, there are definitely schools in America. I know there are conservatoires as well. So I don't know if that's kind of before that idea was that when they didn't exist over here. But there's definitely those old schools that have been around for a long time in England. And your
co-star, Stuart, I'm told, this should raise his...
Oh, yeah.
His reputation in Charlotte was on an episode of Downton Abbey.
He was,
so there you
yes.
go. I rest my case. So you have to play piano because everybody in the show plays sometimes multiple instruments, actually, which I think would make it very difficult if you have to have an understudy come in.
Oh, the understudies can play everything on that stage.
Oh my
it's amazing.
Gosh.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Anyway, you play piano and sing because you're a songwriter in this, or at least you help him reach his musical dream. So let's hear a bit of a piece in which you accompany yourself on piano. This is you and a song called The Hill.
Walking up the hill tonight when you have closed your eyes. Wish I didn't have to make all those mistakes and be wise. Please try to be patient and know that I'm still learning. I'm sorry that you had to see the strength inside me burning. But where are you, my angel, now? Don't you see me crying? And I know that you can't do it all, but you can't say I'm not trying.
Our guest, Danny Duvall, this is one of the rare opportunities we actually have music of the actors who are in the production here in Charlotte singing that we can actually play. That's in the second act.
Yeah.
That's a moment where all the lights dim and it's just you in a spotlight with the piano and that song. And I'm curious what that song is about. Who is it about?
I think it changes. I think it starts and it's about her husband. And then it shifts, and she starts thinking about Guy, I think so.
This is a very interesting story, this love story, because it's not your traditional star-crossed lovers romance, because they're not star-crossed. Mm. And it's not this typical thing where the two people who have animosity toward each other somehow collide and realize they are the perfect mates for each other. You kind of meet in a moment in time. Mm-hmm. Improve each other's lives. Shall I give it away? No. And then something else happens. And it's that moment in time, I guess, where the show gets its name once.
Right.
I've never seen a story like that, I don't think.
No, it's it's real, you know. It's we like to use the term modern day love story because it's not happily ever after, and it's complicated, and love is, and when you meet people, but like you say, they change each other, and it's a moment in time.
And you can extrapolate it out to something beyond the love story, because there are a lot of people that we meet in our lives who have a profound and life-changing impact on us. We're not in love with them. There's no romance involved. It's just it's a happenstance meeting, and suddenly we're different.
Yeah.
And maybe our life's been improved. Maybe it hasn't. But everybody can relate to someone in their lives doing that to or for them.
Yeah. And I think it being guy and girl, it allows the audience to maybe reflect on their lives and those people, you know.
Although she does a lot more for him, I think, than he does. He fixes her vacuum. I mean.
Well, that's all she really wanted, wasn't it?
But she really catapults him onto a new life path. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you explain that? Did you talk about that in the? Because is this based on a real story, a true story?
No.
No. Okay. But how did you? What did you say about that in rehearsal, if anything?
I don't think actually we looked at it as her doing a lot more for him than him doing for her, and I think she needed as much healing and help as he does, really. And she ends up in what I think is, it may not be a better place, but she's shifted from where she started, mm-hmm. and she probably needed that push in a direction as much as he did, and I think he does that for her as well.
The director, John Tiffany, says that all of the people in the play are individualized, and that's true. Everybody that you see on the stage is a completely different individualized character, but he said that he transmitted that by making the decision to allow the audience on stage prior. Well, excuse me, I missed a part. But they're an ensemble of misshapen people who form a community, and he transmitted that by allowing people to be on the stage with them prior to the start of the show. Misshapen people. Is that to say we're all misshapen in some way?
And I think it's not shying away from that fact. There's no two people alike on stage, as there are in some musicals. That is the thing that you know you go for. But this is kind of absolutely embracing how crazy and different and not messed up, but you know how different everyone is in life, and showing all those different people.
You've been on the road for about a year, and mm-hmm. I'm told that you just told me before we started this conversation that you've signed up for the next year.
Yes.
Holy moly. a year's a long time to be on the road. I think you had just had your 400th performance recently.
Yeah.
That's a lot of shows. You're going to be leaving the show maybe, after 800 performances.
Right. I don't think that far ahead. One day at a time.
And it's not just the fact that, of course, most of us go to work and do the same thing every day. So I don't know why this is so unique.
I don't know if you say the exact words every day.
Well, you know, was it Alec Baldwin who said what he likes about being in the theater as opposed to being on television or in the movies is that for 2 hours every day, he knows precisely where he's going to be, precisely what he's going to say, and precisely what others will say to him.
Right.
And there's a comfort
in that.
Comfort
in that.
But how do you deal with keeping it fresh and also being on the road, living in a hotel every day of your life?
Yeah. Well, actually, I try and I try and not stay in hotels. Airbnb is kind of my godsend. I try and find apartments because, like you say, it's the little things. It's being able to wake up and cook your own eggs or that kind of thing that kind of keep you sane. And it's great. I mean, you're never bored. We're in new cities mostly every week. There's always something to do, new places to see. So there's positives about it as well. But it's a little bit, hamster on the wheel kind of feeling, like you never actually settle and sit down, but I'm having a great time.
What do you think the secret of this being so successful is? It was a small movie that developed into this gargantuanly successful Broadway musical. What's the secret?
I think the secret is it's different from anything that's been before, really, but I think that it's real, and it's about it's about the story of these two people, and that's enough. You know, we don't, there's not, like you said, lots of costume and lights and set. It's just a simple story. It's very human. And
when you juxtapose that next to Ghost or Phantom or Wicked or any of the, you name a show,
yeah,
it's refreshing. It's
yeah,
completely different. I would think that this is a show, this is a musical for people who hate musicals.
Yeah.
And it's a musical for people who love musicals, because they'll find something completely different in it that they probably haven't experienced before.
Yeah.
That could be part of the secret, too. Danny Duvall plays Girl, one of the two leads in Once, which is at the Belk Theater through Sunday. BlumenthalArts.org is the place for tickets. Good luck on your second year of the run.
Thank you very much.
Come back.
Yes.
And bring Stuart.
We may do.
Bring Stuart next time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Charlotte is a city that flirts with jazz. We work hard to make this uniquely American music available in live venues, and just when things start to reach critical mass, we turn away, and then the whole process has to start all over again. But something or someone has happened here. That someone is Lonnie Davis, who through a love of the music and sheer force of will is making jazz in Charlotte a reality again. She started the Jazz Arts Initiative in 2009 to provide jazz education and events, and her Jazz Room series each month at the Blumenthal Stage Door Theater sells out. Well, now Lonnie Davis and Blumenthal Arts are joining forces with jazz great Wynton Marsalis to create the first Charlotte Classic Jazz Festival 2014. The Downbeat is this weekend. And here to talk about who's on the bill is Lonnie Davis, President and CEO at Jazz Arts Initiative, and Tom Gabbard, President and CEO of Blumenthal Performing Arts. Thank you both for being here.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you, Mike.
Welcome back to both of you. How would you assess the state of jazz in Charlotte today? I mean, you've been working as hard as a human being can to improve it. How would you assess where it's come before you started to where it is today?
Well, I've been here for 8 years, and I would certainly say that there was a scene before I got here. And I hear that there were a lot of things going on, you know, back in the 90s as it related to jazz and jazz venues, and then something happened. And so I think I got here after that something happened. And so
do we know what that something was?
Well,
we had weekend jazz festivals on the street downtown that were absolutely magnificent, with some fairly big names coming to play on three or four different stages. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that's what I was told. And I'm like, wow, what happened? You know, and so I really don't know. But and so when we got here, We assessed, you know, what was going on as it related to jazz, met a lot of great musicians, but realized that, the potential for jazz was great here in Charlotte.
You're a flutist. Your husband is a drummer. You both came from New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. We all know New Orleans' relationship with music, and you said you found a floundering jazz scene without a core. You could have stayed at home and listened to jazz on your stereo and played along, but you chose to risk a lot. It's a risk to do what you've done.
Oh, yeah, it came very natural, and it comes very natural. I have a love and a passion for this music. You know, I've studied jazz in a conservatory in New Orleans, NOCA, New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, and this is just our lives, and this is, we love it.
Well, we're going to talk more with Lonnie and with Tom Gabbard with the Blumenthal Performing Arts about the Charlotte Classic Jazz Festival, which begins on October the 4th. That's Saturday when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and North Carolina District Export Council's Discover Global Markets, the Americas. Intensive breakout sessions on refining export strategy October 29th to 31st at the Westin. Details at ncdec.us. Secret Service Director Julia Pearson faced some tough questions yesterday from Congress about how an armed intruder managed to get so far into the White House. Diane Ream and her guest will talk about the Secret Service failures and the safety of the president coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Ream Show. And when we come back, we're talking about jazz, and more specifically, jazz in Charlotte. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Is it too easy to vote or just too hard? Across the country, activists and officials are asking those questions, and North Carolina is at the heart of that debate. I'm Michelle Martin from NPR. Please join me on Monday, October 27th at McGlowan Theater to talk about what's right and wrong with voting. We'll talk about how the laws are changing and how the demographics of voters are too. Tickets for the event are available at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Lonnie Davis, President and CEO of the Jazz Arts Initiative, and Tom Gabbard, President and CEO of Blumenthal Performing Arts. Together, along with Wynton Marsalis, they're putting on the first Charlotte Festival beginning Saturday at the Knight Theater. We'll talk about that. And then it pays off on October the 7th, which I think is Tuesday night.
It's a Tuesday.
At the Belk with Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. And don't forget, I was going to say that you can't find, I did say you can't find jazz on the radio, I think, in the opening. Well, you can. Silly me. WFAE has jazz on our HD2 channel. You can get more information about that on WFAE.org. You can also stream it if you want to on your computer. You started this jazz room series at the Belk, at the Blumenthal's. There's too many B's at the Blumenthal's Stage Door Theater, which is on College at 7th Street. It's a really nice, intimate venue, and you've had real success with that, haven't you?
Yes.
Why?
Absolutely.
So many others have not. Why have you been able to do this?
Well, I think it's the perfect listening room. It's the perfect size, and it allows just enough flexibility for us to create the perfect ambiance for jazz. And so it's, you know, we try to capture, you know, what feels like a jazz club. And, you know, we have cabaret tables, and it's so intimate, and the audience is so close to the performers. And I think that makes a huge difference. Audiences love to be close to the performers.
Yeah, the only thing that's missing is the cigarette smoke. That's the only thing.
Thankfully, it's missing.
That's right.
Right. But we even have a bar. You know, the bar is in the theater. And so I think, you know, all of those things count.
Now, you at the Blumenthal, Tom, have been watching Lonnie's success in your theater, both the Stage Door Theater and her. Occasionally that migrates to the Knight Theater down there on South Tryon Street. Is that why you have partnered with her on this jazz festival?
That's exactly it. Lonnie began programming the jazz room, and honestly, I think I was just kind of preliminarily aware of it. I didn't follow it that carefully. And then when I saw her selling out single performances, she's gone to doubles, selling those out, I began to really pay attention to her and could see that this is somebody who had good taste, who was a good organizer, somebody that we could really work with to build that jazz scene again.
I know that this is also something that you have wanted to do for a while. Why?
Well, number one, we thanks to former Mayor Fox, had a good introduction to Wynton Marsalis to begin conversations with Wynton on how we could build a long-term relationship with this incredible jazz artist, and how we could use Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra as kind of the bedrock to create a festival that was focused on classic jazz. There are plenty of jazz festivals around, but Wynton's vision with this is to uniquely create something that focuses on classic jazz. So that opportunity to build a relationship with one of the world's great artists was something we were interested in. And then to add to that a local component that gave us an opportunity to recognize our local artists, give us an opportunity to connect with our kids in the community that have an interest in jazz, to create something that went beyond just presenting jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra to something that was far more full-featured, that was connected to our community.
Well, thanks to you, we had Wynton Marsalis on the show, I think it was last year, in one of the most eye-opening and ear-opening conversations we've ever had on this show. We got so much response from that program because of what he said. and mostly about what he said about education, music education in the schools, and getting children involved in not just jazz, but just music of any kind. And it was a very thoughtful. I didn't expect him, I don't think anybody expected him to have really been so thoughtful about this. He has devoted an enormous amount of thought to this. And when he was here, and he's been here several times, he's gone out to schools and he's worked not with the jazz band necessarily in the high schools, but with the non-jazz performers to turn them on to this. That's what you're trying to do in part with this festival, particularly on Saturday at the night.
Yes, with some of the program elements would be Jazz for Tots.
Yes, let's talk about that. Jazz for Tots.
Yes.
What exactly is that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's an introduction to jazz for the youngest of our audiences. So it's an intro to jazz for, you know, I would say maybe two-year-olds on, you know, and that it's a program that will involve a live band. Uh-huh. and we'll be serving peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and we'll be performing for those. It's a concert
what
for
do they,
young people.
What do they play?
They won't be playing. Well, the kids won't be playing, but it's a very interactive program, and so we'll get up. You know, they'll get up, and we'll have them, you know, to learning how to scat, learning the 12-bar blues form, and just really trying to, you know, grasp this music in a very fun and interactive way.
Have you done this before?
Actually the launch of this program we've been wanting to do.
Do you know it works?
Yes, it certainly does work. There are other models for programs like this around the country and other jazz organizations. Jazz at Lincoln Center has one called the WeBop program. And then there are other organizations that provide jazz education that also do introduction to jazz for young kids.
This, of course, fits into the Blumenthal's model because every arts organization in Charlotte has to have an educational component to it. This is probably new territory for you, I would think.
It is new territory, but it's consistent with how we focused on growing our service to the community. We grow by trying to identify niches that we think are underserved that have great potential. And so this is one, particularly with the success that we saw that Lonnie was having with the Jazz Room. This was something that it just felt like it was the right initiative to take on.
So the Jazz for Tots actually kicks off the whole festival.
Yes.
On Saturday.
11 o'clock.
At the night. And then you have the Kids Jazz Playhouse for 4 hours. What is that?
So that's a getaway for kids, something that they can do you know, they probably won't be there for 4 hours, but that will involve arts and crafts. We'll have a reading corner, Imagine On, and the folks at Imagine On, they're providing books about jazz and jazz artists, and they'll be doing readings, you know, every hour so kids can learn about jazz artists. Thanks to the folks at Imagine On, we'll also have an instrument petting zoo for kids to come and, you know, learn about different instruments and play them. And so it's just a more interactive way for kids to come and being introduced not just to jazz but to music.
Now, I keep saying this is at the Knight Theater, but obviously there must be different parts of the night that you're using, because a lot of this stuff is going on simultaneously, because that's going on simultaneously with the Lunis McGlowan Young Jazz Artist Competition. Lunis would have loved this. I knew Lunis, and Lunis's name is on the theater here at Spirit Square. He was a jazz pianist and composer, and well thought of in the jazz community, particularly in the clubs in New York, and was longtime music director at WBTV back when television stations had music directors because they had live music. And he loved young performers. He loved them. So where will these be taking place in the night? If the kids are doing the Playhouse and then this competition is going on, where are they?
So the competition will take place on the stage of the Knight Theater, and the audience will also be on stage. We have a panel of great judges and a live group that will perform a professional jazz group that will accompany these very talented finalists for this competition.
How were the finalists chosen?
they had to present an application, you know, an audio recording and a written application. And, you know, we were recruiting students from all over our area to participate, and we had a lot of response, and we were able to choose, you know, six very talented and diverse students from 8th grade up to 11th. We actually don't have any seniors in that group, but we have some very talented students, violin players, vocalists, trumpet players, you name it. They're going to all be competing for this prize.
So is there a single prize for all this?
Three prizes. Okay. First, second, and third place.
How do you choose among violinists, vocalists, trumpet players? Because it's all, I mean, it's jazz,
sure,
but it's all different. Singing is a different skill than playing an instrument. So how
sure
do you choose a winner?
Well, you know, those judges will certainly have their work cut out for them, but there are some common elements, soulfulness, you know, how an interpretation of the music and students' ability to play the chord changes and to, you know, execute and make a connection with their audience, stage presence, and all of those things will certainly be taken into account, and those are all common among all of the instruments.
You know, one of the great things about the Blumenthal is that you have these six wonderful venues, but they're not in, and maybe this is a good or a bad thing, I'll get your impression of it, they're not in one building. You have the Knight Theater, you have Spirit Square, you have the Blumenthal, the Belk, and the booth and the stage door, which are in the Bank of America building, tower building. Most cities, if they are lucky enough to have a performing arts center, will have a theater, maybe two, in a single building. Does this provide, I know it provides challenges, but does it also provide opportunities?
Huge opportunities. You know, one of the reasons these buildings are built in many communities is to energize the local economy, to energize restaurants and a lot of the amenities, hotels that go along with it. So spreading these venues apart gives us a way in Charlotte here to energize, create more restaurants, create a more vibrant nightlife scene. And I think over time, people are going to see with the Classic Jazz Festival that we really build on that in a big way. We anticipate in future years that there'll be additional activities that'll take place there on the Levine Center for the Arts campus. In addition to the Knight Theater, we have three art museums. We have the Romare Bearden Park. We have some tremendous assets. And so I think when people look back 8 or 10 years from now, they'll see this Classic Jazz Festival be much, much larger, that it'll grow consistently over those years, and it'll use that entire site, because that Levine campus is really a fantastic asset to this community.
I'm assuming that when you decided to go ahead with this festival, that you approached Lonnie to spearhead it or to organize it and put it together. Is that correct?
Absolutely, because Lonnie has a lot of insight into this area that is not our core competence. We have a lot of expertise at Blumenthal, but to realize she had a lot of expertise in jazz generally, certainly in the local jazz scene, knowing who some of the players can be to be a part of the local connection to this, and also a connection with the audiences here. Mm-hmm. So she's lended expertise to this that we really needed to succeed.
But still, you have this expertise, but still, this is an enormous undertaking, it
yes
would seem to me. And the first one is probably the most important one, because everything that follows rests on the success of this one. What was your reaction when Tom came to you and said, let's do this?
I was absolutely thrilled. You know,
because you have a day job, don't you?
Well, jazz is my day job.
Okay, all right.
So, absolutely thrilled and honored to be working more extensively with Blumenthal Performing Arts. This is something that I and us at Jazz Arts Initiative, we've been wanting to see for a long time in Charlotte. And, you know, as a world-class city, this city needs this type of an event.
Many of these activities at the Jazz Festival on Saturday at the Knight Theater are free.
Yes.
Or very, very, very inexpensive, like $5. You're having, but one of the free things is the Charlotte Classic Jazz Festival Second Line Jazz Parade. This is straight out of New Orleans. It goes from Trade Street, Trade and Tryon, south to the Levine campus. How did you find the players for the second line parade?
Oh, well, you just have to know how to pick them. So we were able to assemble a really great band. And with the second line band and any New Orleans band, you know, the drums are the most important element. So we have Mr. O.C. Davis, my husband, who, you know, is a New Orleans drummer. He's going to be holding it down on the snare. And, you know, we have some other really super talented local and regional musicians who are coming in to make that second line band happen.
And then that night, on Saturday night from 7 to 10 in the Night Theater, for $5, you can go see a lot of the region's top performers, jazz performers, play. Who are some of those folks? Or do you want to tell us?
We have Chad Lawson, who has been here at the studio. He's going to be performing with his quartet, uh-huh. and that's a great group of musicians. We also have Charles Craig, another super fine pianist who's played with, you know, with many people, Roy Hargrove and Christian McBride and others. We have Brian Miller, you know, out of the Durham area. He's a great alto sax player. He actually played our Charlie Parker tribute at the Jazz Room. And then we have Andy and Zach Page, who are twins, who are coming in from the Boone, Asheville area. They're going to bring their whole band, and they're going to do some gypsy jazz for us as well. So it's great diversity that evening, and they're all amazing musicians.
All of that for $5.
$5, 3 hours of jazz for $5.
I have a sneaking suspicion, Tom, you're losing money on that. and then on Tuesday night, Wynton Marsalis will be here with the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra at the Belk Theater. That is not $5, but this is the second or third time he's been here. Is this going to become a regular? Is this going to become like his second or third home? New Orleans, New York, Charlotte.
This is an annual event for us. So people should get involved here at the start and then be a part of growing this, because it's something we're going to be very, very proud of here.
How will you measure the success of this event?
Boy, certainly through attendance, but I think also looking at our impact on young artists and how we're nurturing those young artists, you know, both in the schools as well as pre-professionally.
You can get more information about this at blumenthalarts.org under the Music tab, and I'll bet you have a website, too.
Yes, the Jazz Arts Initiative's www.thejazzarts.org.
Okay, Lonnie Davis, President and CEO of the Jazz Arts Initiative, Tom Gabbard, President and CEO of Blumenthal Performing Arts. Thanks for joining us.